Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, applying for a mortgage can be stressful and challenging, and let alone if you secure a mortgage to find that you're struggling to meet payments for it. On the line now to speak about dealing with mortgage distress, we have a Drogheda-based mortgage arrears expert, Rosalind Doherty. Rosalind, you're very welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dominic. Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Oh, that's an absolute pleasure. Now, listen, in your line of work, can you talk to us about the most common types of problems that people are having with mortgages? I mean, what exactly is the sort of general story of what happens?
Okay, I suppose reading all the newspapers and headlines, the impression is that things are getting better. I mean, I deal with mortgage arrears and distressed mortgages all day, every day, and I cannot see the situation improving at all in the past 10 years.
So hang on, so when you say you can't see it getting better, do you mean that the level of trouble people are in just isn't changing?
It's not changing at all. I mean, I hear the same kind of stories and situations every day where people are they're so distressed, they don't know where to turn, and burying their heads in the sand, I suppose, is one of the biggest issues that I hear every day, which is really only compounding the issue.
Yeah.
So ideally why I'm talking to you today is really to dispel the myth that banks want your house back, they want you out in the street, and try to encourage people as best I can to engage with their lenders. That's first and foremost. That's what people need to do. So don't hide, open your letters, engage with the banks, talk to them about your situation, or ideally go to somebody who's, like myself, who's regulated and authorised by the central bank, you know, to deal with mortgage arrears and negotiate on your behalf. But definitely the banks do not want homes back.
That's an interesting point. The banks aren't out to get you as such, because I think that's the feeling people might have. Oh, everyone's against me and they don't care about me, you know, and just as you say, put your head in the sand.
Yeah, I suppose this is kind of like the stigma and paranoia that goes along with being in debt and having threatening letters coming in your door on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So, like, people, I find they don't tell their families, you know, the situation that they're in. Some wives will actually hide letters from their husbands and vice versa, and they're not doing it in a bad way, they're just doing it they think they're protecting the other party, whereby what they're actually doing is compounding the issue. But I've had customers who've come to me with repossession orders granted on their homes with like a 12-month stay, which means they should be looking for alternative accommodation within those 12 months. I have never seen a lender actually enforce the repossession order.
Really?
And they're still, and they're actually still open to negotiating, even at that stage. So I'll just give you one example of a client who came to me last year, repossession order on their home in Dublin. I think it was a 9-month stay they were granted. Now, the bank were demanding €1,500 per month in order to fix the situation. When I went in and did their financial statement, the client could only afford €750, which was sustainable and affordable each month.
Yeah.
The proposal went into the lender, who already had the repossession order, and they still engaged. They have put the repossession order on hold, which means they're not going to enforce it, and they're allowing the customer to pay €750 versus a figure of €1,500 per month. So what I'm trying to get across is, no matter how bad, if you've been in court, if repossession order has been granted, if you're getting legal letters, the banks are open to engaging and speaking with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a remarkable story. So they'd gone all the way, essentially, legally speaking, the bank, with the repossession order, but they still wanted to talk. And that must be giving hope to a few people listening to that.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Because I just really want to get the point across. You know, engage, pick up the phone, speak to somebody about your situation. Don't bury your head in the sand is really the message that's so important today.
Yeah. And I mean, are there other options then that you could recommend to some people? Like, I've heard of something called mortgage to rent, and all these things.
Absolutely. Ideally, when a customer comes to me, my first and foremost, I look and see, is there a possible resolution there first? And it's unfortunate, every lender, they're all completely different, whereby I know some lenders will offer a long-term resolution. I know other ones will be looking for mortgage to rent. basically what mortgage to rent, you surrender ownership of the home, but you get to stay in your house with a 25-year rolling lease. And you have the option to review your circumstances after 5 years to see can you purchase the property back. But it alleviates you know, the threat of legal proceedings.
Right.
Customers, they don't have to move their kids to different schools. The kids could still come home to the same property every evening. The only difference is that either a social housing body or another lender or a private housing company are the owners of your property, but your next door neighbours do not know that you've gone through this process and that somebody else owns your house.
Right.
But, you know, you have the option after 5 years of living there and adhering to your tenancy agreement to look at buying the property back. Now, you also get the chance to buy it back at a discounted rate, which means if your original mortgage was $200,000, if it was sold to an approved housing body or social housing body for $140,000, that's the purchase price that you look at in 5 years' time, $140,000, okay, rather than the $200,000.
So you're offered the deal back, yeah.
Some of the debt is getting written off in that sense, but fairly, what I believe is that once people get in the frame of mind, I'm safe in my house, that they can start functioning properly again. You know, they can go out and look for work. Their circumstances can change significantly within 5 years, whereby both parties may be working, they have affordability to go and look at buying the property back. So it's all there to play for. The most important thing is to keep the person and the family in their home, whether it's owned by a bank or a private housing body.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a fantastic initiative there. I mean, that's a way for someone to escape the trap, as it were, of just trying their best to do something they can't do and then just essentially stay where they are, and then in 5 years they get a chance to re-engage and maybe try again to purchase
Absolutely.
It back. But I mean,
Absolutely.
Just I mean, going I, back
I'm,
to...
I'm sure you know yourself, your yeah. life can just change, you know, significantly within 5 years.
Yeah.
So
well,
it's just... There's a work now. They yeah. may have a, you know, a good steady job in 2 years' time. They have affordability. They're paying rent throughout this process, which is reduced in comparison to a mortgage payment. So they might even be able to save up a little bit of money and then look at buying the property back.
Yeah. I mean, just your initial point, Rosalind, about the pressure people are under not being different in 10 years. I mean, what I see in terms of there's very high rents around Dublin and the city's very, very high rents, and there's it's hard to get mortgages anyway, but there seems to be a lot of financial stress. I mean, you probably encounter this a lot more than any of the rest of us do, of course, but there's a lot of stress people are under at the moment generally.
Absolutely. And as I said, like the media seems to be giving off this persona that, you know, everything is good, the economy is good, people are back in work. People are back at work, but they still may have a level of arrears of 70,000-80,000 on their account.
Yeah.
And it's just really a matter of assessing the situation, looking at what comes into the property each month, what goes out, what the customer can afford to pay for the mortgage. But just another point I really want to stress today is no matter how bad your finances are, try and get something into the mortgage each month. Try not to skip a month. If your payment is 500 each month and you can only afford 200, get the €200 in. It's just to show the bank that should they start looking at legal proceedings, that you are committed to your house, and even in the bad times, you have been able to make a contribution to the mortgage.
Yeah.
And as you said, the rental properties, like I'm in Drogheda here, properties are €1,800 to €2,000 a month. So it makes a lot more sense to engage with your lender, try and get a resolution in place, and in my experience, resolving your mortgage and getting a reduced monthly payment is much more affordable than going into the rental sector. And, you know, then you have the danger, I suppose, of the property being owned by a vulture fund in 12 months' time. This is if you're renting and you really don't have any protection there, whereby if you stay in your home, whether it's through an agreement with your lender or, as I said, mortgage to rent, you don't have that uncertainty hanging over your head.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's fascinating to hear that advice, Rosalind. I'm sure it's very, very helpful to those listening. And we can find out more about your work at thefinancialfoundation.ie. Isn't that right?
Yes, Yes, you can follow us on Facebook. I put some of the resolutions up there and the stories, the good news stories that I get on a daily basis, because, I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than ringing a family to say, look, you're safe in your home, you've had 10 years of stress, the resolution is there for you now, and it's just so, so rewarding. But if anybody just, you know, if they want to pick up the phone, speak to me in confidence, I can assess the situation and even try and guide them if they want to go ahead and try and get a resolution themselves. So if people would like to contact me on 041 983 5710, or as you said, go onto our website, thefinancialfoundation.ie, or onto our Facebook page.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Rosalind, I'm sure there are folks who are in distress who would love to speak to you. And I'll just, the website's probably easier to remember, thefinancialfoundation.ie. But I tell you what, Rosalind, it's an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Well done with all the work you are doing. I'm sure it's very rewarding when you do get those results. And please, God, you'll continue to get them. Thanks for joining me. Yeah, this week marks National Chipping Week. Chip off the old block. Well, this is not the kind of chip I mean. If your pet is not microchipped, this might be the week to do it. Now, in studio now to talk about this and our other pet issues, perhaps, we have a vet whose blog has been named in the global top 15 veterinary websites and blogs in 2019. Pete Wedderburn, Pete the Vet. Pete, it's good to have
morning.
You.
Yeah,
good to have you in. So, first of all, let's do microchipping. What is it? Why is it important? And who needs, which pets should get it?
Okay, well, basically a microchip is like a tiny electronic gizmo. The size, it looks a bit like a grain of rice. And it's made of silicon and glass, that kind of stuff. And it's injected under the skin of a pet. And once it's injected, it's an inert object, just remains there forever, just sitting there. And what it does then is, if somebody passes a special microchip scanner over it, that stimulates the chip to emit a radio wave. And that radio wave is not anything complex, it's just a 15-digit number. The radio wave basically repeatedly gives out a 15-digit number. And the scanner then picks up that number and displays it on its screen. So once you have that 15-digit number, it's essentially a unique number. It's the 15 digits is such a mass, it's like a trillion or something, huge.
Yeah.
So it's effectively a unique number. So what the person who scans the animal can do is they go to a database online, they put the number in, and then they get back the full details of the owner that's on the database linked to that number. And that's what happens. So microchips therefore allow animals to carry the full details of their owner around with them all the time. And that's really important because animals can't talk. So if they get lost, it's very hard to find.
It's like 101 Dalmatians all over again.
Exactly. So microchipping is compulsory in Ireland in dogs and horses. It's not compulsory in cats, but many cat owners choose to have it done. It's also compulsory in some exotic creatures like parrots that are being, especially when they're being moved from country to country or whatever. It's become the universally recognized way of identifying animals permanently.
Yeah, well, I suppose it makes sense. So if I'm listening to you now, want to microchip my cat or something, what would I do? How would it cost?
Well, what you would do is you go to your local vet.
Yeah.
And it's a simple procedure. It's just like, it's an injection. It's a slightly bigger needle than a vaccine or whatever, but it's still a very, very sharp needle. So most animals barely notice it happening. So the cost depends on the vet. So it could be anywhere between 25 and 40 euros, maybe. Once it's done for life.
Yeah.
Now, this week is National Chipping Week, as you said. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean free chipping for people. It's not quite as good as that.
Oh, well, I thought we were getting somewhere here.
but what people probably don't realise is that if you have a dog, you're legally bound to have that dog microchipped. Mm. And as well as having a dog microchipped, you should also have a microchip certificate. Just like a registration certificate for a car, you should have a microchip certificate for your dog. And so if the dog warden stopped you and said, I'd like you to hand in your microchip certificate to the office so I can make sure it's all above order. You have to do that. So a lot of people don't actually have that certificate. Maybe they weren't given it originally, maybe it got lost, I don't know. So what's happening this week is Dogs Trust is offering free microchip certificates for dogs. So what you have to do is find out your microchip number. You may have that written down somewhere, or you can go to the vet and they won't charge you to scan your dog and identify what the number is. Once you have the number, you can go to the Dogs Trust website and fill in the appropriate forms, and they'll then give you a microchip certificate, the one that you're meant to have already.
Wow, okay. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Normally it might cost you, I don't know, 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 euro to get a new microchip certificate. So this is a real benefit for people this week. They can get this for free.
Yeah, well, that sounds pretty good. So the Dogs Trust is offering that, so you need to get the number
to dogstrust.ie.
Yeah, and you can find it there. So microchipping seems like it's a sensible thing to do as well, though. I mean, it's obviously legally binding if you have a dog or a horse, but it could be a very sensible thing to do if you have, you know, quite a valuable cat,
for most cat owners, their cats are really valuable to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if they haven't got any monetary value, and if your cat gets lost, again, people can quiz your cat as much as they want,
but they're not going to get the answers they want.
The cat's going to say meow. It's not going to say my owner is Pete Wedderburn who lives here. You know.
Yeah.
So the microchip gives a cat a voice, essentially.
Yeah. Mm. And speaking about cats, you were recently at the National Cat Awards in London. Now, what's all that about?
That was really fun. Basically, I think as people have recognised for a long time that dogs can bring a lot of good into people's lives. People think about guide dogs or companion dogs or assistance dogs for people with different disabilities, and dogs that visit people in nursing homes to give them comfort and friendship. But what cats generally are under-recognized. People think about cats as just being there without necessarily contributing an awful lot. Anyway.
Well, they're known as being a bit more selfish than dogs as well.
They haven't got great
keep
PR,
to themselves.
Really.
Yeah.
So this basically a charity called Cats Protection, which is really the equivalent of Dogs Trust in the UK, funnily enough. It's a big national cat charity. They do a lot of work with cats. They basically look after cats that aren't being very well looked after themselves. So they organise tens of thousands of neuterings of feral cats, for example, and they also find tens of thousands of homes for new cats every year. But as well as that, they're very engaged in spreading information, good information about cats, trying to correct some of the myths and misconceptions. And one of the things that they do is they have a team of something like 12,000 volunteers around the country running all the different branches. And so anybody with a cat issue of any kind in the UK will be very likely to contact the local cat protection branch. So through that network, they basically identified a whole bunch of cats that really have done quite heroic things. And so the Cat of the Year awards have been set up to recognize those cats who made a huge difference to people's lives.
What are these heroic things these cats have been up to?
Well, to give you an example, the winning cat was a cat called Jeffrey. And what Jeffrey did that was heroic was that there was a 13-year-old boy called Finn, and he has Asperger syndrome. And what happened was, very sadly, his father died a couple of years ago, and Jeffrey was plunged into depression. He just couldn't cope with this. It was a terrible time for him, and it was like he was in a downward spiral, and he was completely withdrawn and not engaging at all with the world, and his mother was terribly worried. And so she ended up getting this cat called Jeffrey, and Jeffrey transformed Finn's life. The thing is that cats don't judge. They don't want you to talk about your feelings. They just accept people the way they are. And for Finn, that was completely life-changing. What happened was that he became instantly highly attached to the cat, and the fog just lifted from around him. He began to smile, he began to have fun, his whole outlook changed completely. He's just a little black cat, Jeffrey. You wouldn't say he's anything spectacular to look at, just a small friendly black cat, but for Jeffrey he was transforming. I mean, as well as that, there was a cat called Jack. He was the winner of a category called the Hero Cat, because his owner has an issue called global autonomic dysfunction, which means she has occasional seizures. And what Jack learned to do was to give a warning. As he raised the alarm whenever his owner was about to suffer a seizure. Somehow he was able to spot that this was happening, and he'd let her know, and he'd let the people around know by meowing loudly and getting agitated.
Wow. Yeah, well, so I mean, it's remarkable that animals, though, they're so remarkable in that sense, they are seeing things that we don't see. I mean, there was that wonderful dog. I mean, sorry to bring it back to dogs just for a moment, but there was a dog who was able to sniff out that his owner had some sort of cancerous cells going on.
Well, yeah, actually, there's a charity called Medical Detection Dogs in the UK, and they're now using dogs formerly as a diagnostic tool for cancer of the prostate gland. What happens is men submit urine samples, and these urine samples go into little pots that go onto a carousel that moves round, like a conveyor belt, I suppose, and dogs step forward to sniff each sample. And if there's urine in the sample, then they'll sit down and not move at all. Sorry, not as urine. If there's cancer cells in the urine, the dog will sit down and stare at it. So the dog's able to pick up the smell of cancer cells in the urine. And it's more accurate than any formal, I suppose, traditional scientific diagnostic test. It's really impressive.
That is very impressive. Yes. The things that we discover that they can do. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, warmer sun, just before I let you go, pet owners making sure to keep their pets hydrated and cool. One query from a pet owner, they couldn't get their dog to come out of the sea. So any advice on that?
Yeah, well, basically this comes down to a very simple, in theory, command, which is the recall command. And every dog owner should make sure their dog has an effective recall command. That simply means that when you call the dog, it comes back to you. Now, most of the time that's easy to do. If your dog's just wandering around in a field, not up to much, and you call them, they'll be happy to come back to you because you give them some attention and tell them they're a great dog and they like that. However, if your dog is doing something that they absolutely love, like for this dog swimming in the sea, and you call them, then they mentally do a calculation. What's more fun, going back to them or staying here enjoying swimming around in the sea? And they kind of go, I prefer to stay here. This is more fun than going back to them. And so it means the person's extremely frustrated because the dog is just swimming around in the sea. They have to go off and do something and the dog won't come back. Now, the answer to it is very simple, which is to go back to the very basics and teach your dog a really strong recall command. And that means that you go into your back garden where there's no distractions and you call your dog back and you give them praise and a treat. And you do this time after time after time. And then you go somewhere where there's a few more distractions. So maybe you go to the local park. And again, you do the recall command time after time after time. And only when your dog literally comes galloping back to you every time you call them, only then do you dare let the dog go near the water.
the ultimate distraction.
And that is the ultimate distraction. But at that stage, the dog should have learned, when I hear that call, I come back. And so it should overcome the appeal of the pleasure of swimming.
So basically, we're talking about a well-trained dog.
A well-trained dog is a much better pet. And if anybody has difficulty with training their dog, well, there's a very good network of professional dog trainers in Ireland now. And these are people who spent their lives really learning more about how to train dogs, getting the academic theory right, as well as putting the practice in. And so they're really, really good at helping people train dogs properly. And what everybody needs to have is a well-trained dog so they can get the most of the companionship and friendship of the dog. A badly trained dog just causes trouble for everybody.
I think we've all experienced that at one stage.
Absolutely,
right? Well, Pete, it's an absolute pleasure to have you in. I hope you're enjoying your summer. Busy down at work, yeah?
It's very busy, all sorts of things going on, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's fun, I love my job.
It's nice to meet someone who loves their job. Well, I often get to do that in here. But Pete the Vet, it's a real pleasure to have you in, and you can find out more about what Pete is up to at petethevet.com. Well done on that top 15 veterinary websites and blogs in 2019.
I love writing and I love talking on radio and doing television, and it all goes onto the blog. If you're interested in pets, then it's an interesting place to go and visit, an interesting website to look at.
That's it. Well, thanks for coming in, Pete. It's petethevet.com to find out more about that. Now, our prayer coach series is continuing today. I'm delighted to have Father Michael Hurley here with me in the studio. He's the parish priest of St. Martin's Parish and Bohun na Breena Parishes, both parishes in Talla in County Dublin. And he's with me this morning to talk about God's love as a first principle when we come to pray. Father Michael, it's a pleasure to have you again.
Thank you indeed.
Yeah, it's good, good to have you in. And listen, this whole thing about God's love, now this might be the most basic idea in the world, but when we come to pray, maybe we're not thinking that, are we?
Well, normally we probably are not.
And you're saying this is a mistake.
I'm saying that from my own experience. I was just thinking coming in this morning, you know, everything in life changes. I'm very conscious that I'm leaving the summer behind me. I love the summer. I love the heat. I love being out. And it's changing. There's another season coming in. That's not to say that I don't love autumn as well. I do, and the colours and the fire isn't too far away and the glow of the fire. But everything is changing. And I think according as we change, it's going to be reflected upon our prayer. And I know that there are times and cycles in my own life when God is extremely real, extremely tangible. Always he fits into my day-to-day life in a very conscious way. But then other times, well, not so clear, you know. Maybe a struggle with God. Where are you now? So there are seasons and changes. It's not to say one is better than another, but we relate to God as we are.
As we are.
As we are.
But we always say God never changes.
Yeah,
so
that's precisely the point I was coming to.
Okay.
But there is one principle in life that doesn't change, and that's God's love for us, God's love for me. Everything else can change, everything else does change, but God's love does not change. Now, I can change in relation to him, and I can forget about him, I can park him somewhere else, or I can be very conscious of him. And to me, that's as much about grace as anything else. God's loving me. And I know that in my own life, there are moments when, if you like, I wake up to God's love. And there are seasons in that. And it's just delightful to know that God loves me. Mm. And we just need to be constantly going back to that, to God's love for me, as I say, as our first principle.
So first principle, the constancy, if you want, of God's love for me. So how does it affect, affect the morning time? You get out of the bed and you're a bit bleary-eyed and you think, well, I really should say a few prayers. I should start my day with prayer. So how would you start that practically?
I think there's a step before that.
Okay.
Do I really believe that God is on my side? Do I really believe that this day, as I'm waking up, God wants what is best for me? Mm. Do I believe that in this troubled circumstances I'm likely to meet, that God will be in there, wishing, willing, indeed I use the word fighting for me, so that there will be a peaceful outcome, so that I will find a peace? But that's the first principle we go back to. God's love for me, that he desires what is best for me.
So before you even start saying a few prayers, you want to be saying to yourself, reminding yourself that God's constant love is there.
Correct.
Right.
That he wants my friendship.
Okay.
I'm very conscious that I want his friendship. And somewhere I think I might, if I'm strong enough, able enough, alert enough, I might earn his friendship. But that's not the way it works, in my view. God's friendship for me, he desires my friendship. He desires me to be in relationship with him. He desires to open up what is meant by having a friend that doesn't change but is constantly loving and constantly wanting what is best for me.
Hmm.
And that's our beginning.
So, but that idea of God wanting our friendship, I mean, that's a remarkable idea in a way, Father Michael. We're talking about, it's a very profound idea, isn't it? It sort of makes you think that you might be able to have a relationship with God, not just a transaction.
That's right. Well, it changes the way we look. It changes our expectation of God. It actually changes our expectations of life. That God is on.
And that's interesting too, that the way we see life could change through prayer.
Exactly.
And that's not something that we often really talk about. Sometimes we think prayer, I better pray because I'll feel better if I pray. But we may not always think, well, if I pray and if I start doing this, building this relationship with God, I might see things differently, or life itself might be different. And that's a totally new idea, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. But I think if we look through the scriptures, that's what we'll find there, you know. And in the first letter of St. John, he puts it quite clearly like that. Love is not about my love for God, but it's first of all God's love for me. God took the initiative in loving me, in drawing close to me. God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, so that he would draw close to me, so that God would make it possible for me to enter into that relationship of friendship with him.
Right, and this is interesting to hear you mention that passage from the Gospel of St. John, because it reminds me that Christianity is, I think, among all world religions, the only religion where God comes to us rather than us essentially going to God.
In such a personal way.
Yeah.
Yeah, to walk with us, to journey with us. So that's the picture of life. He is journeying with us. He is walking with us. He is guiding us. He has died for us, and we can say that he's continuing to die in loving us, continuing to love with that same power, with that same intensity. So he's inviting us into his love, into his friendship.
Right. And I think, Father Michael, just thinking about this, I think it's going to be a huge, it's a piece of really good news, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because prayer could be something that you might feel burdened with. But if you think of it from your perspective of God wanting me to draw close to him and wanting me to know that I'm loved, that changes things.
It does, yes. And and prayer, the first definition of prayer, I think, is becoming aware that this is what is happening in our world, that God is inviting me into friendship with him, you know. And it's about becoming aware. It's interesting the number of times that Jesus speaks about stay awake, be alert, you know.
It's also interesting the way the disciples were always seem to be sleeping at the most important moments.
They'd lost their sense of what was happening.
Yeah.
They'd lost their sense of God inviting them into a friendship with him. But they decided to have a little snooze. The life was getting a bit difficult and tough.
Well, they fell asleep.
One way of dealing with it was to have a snooze.
Have a snooze. After the Last Supper, they were all snoozing. Yeah, and then before...
No. I'm inviting you.
Yeah.
Okay, it all won't be easy because you'll still have to live your life with its difficulties. But I am taking you, and I will be in there with you at the very core of what's happening for you.
Right. So if someone's listening to you today, Father Michael, and thinks, I've never really done this, I've never really approached a relationship with God that way, what advice would you give them just to get started with?
I think the first thing is just to think of something practical which will help you to be aware that this is what life is about. I'm giving you one example, and I'm borrowing it from about 30 years ago. I remember buying a little a picture, but with big words on it, God does not make junk. You know, that was just a practical help. So that when I came down and had my breakfast in the morning, God does not make junk. You know, I think we need to find some way of being aware that God is present to me. God is loving me. But we do need to have some reminders through our day. Maybe use the Angelus. You know, it's there, it comes up, and, you know, maybe that's our moment to remember. But having moments to remember and to recall, this is really what life is going on at the core of life. So it's about reminders, having reminders around the place maybe where I can, yeah, God is present.
Well, Father Michael, it's very encouraging. Yeah. It's good news, yeah. And it sounds like...
Can I just say one other brief thing?
Sure.
Just one other thing. Because there's also no substitute for extended times of prayer, of being aware. But I think there can be times of silence, listening to God's call of friendship to me. And I'll end with, Pope Francis says a number of things about prayer. But one of the lovely things that he said in my mind is, sometimes you take an extended time of prayer before the Blessed Sacrament. And he says, normally I fall asleep. And he says, isn't that a great way to pray? I only pray if I trust God.
Yeah.
Find your own way to remember what's happening. Remember God's call to friendship.
Well, Father Michael, thank you for that. It is good news to start with the love of God and to find a way to build a rhythm of it. Even if you do fall asleep, it doesn't seem to be the worst thing in the world.
Well, be healing.
Well, it's great to have you in with us this morning, Father Michael, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your summer. Now, we're giving a very warm welcome to worship singer-songwriter Carolyn Hyde, Heart of God Ministries. Carolyn, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Well, I know you're going to play us a little song in a bit, but why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself before you do?
Sure, I'd be happy to. First of all, thank you for welcoming me to the radio station. It's an honor to do this. I am a Messianic Jewish believer in Yeshua, Jesus. And that's what we call him in Hebrew, Yeshua. And I grew up in an Orthodox synagogue in near Chicago in America. But I didn't know Yeshua at that time. After university, I was a hippie living in Mexico, singing in bars and so forth. And one day I had a vision. And in that vision, I saw Jesus. I saw Yeshua. And I knew immediately that he's the Lord. And so then began a journey of coming to the fullness of my faith in him. And that's another story. But I was actually a secret believer for 4 years.
Right, okay.
But then the Lord led me to, because I thought I was the only Jew in the world who believes in him. But then the Lord led me 4 years later to a Messianic congregation. And there I met my husband, and there I found I wasn't the only Jew in the world who believes. Because when I said that to someone, I was told, I grew up thinking Christians hated me. I grew up with some persecution, and so that was my thought, is that the church and the Christians and the Jews are enemies. That's what I was told as a child. But I was told, no, that is not true. That truly born again Christians actually love the Jewish people and love Israel. And that was such a revelation for me. I went through a healing there. And so now, obviously, I love Christians.
Wow. And so it's a new life, right?
It is a new life. And mm-hmm. And I'm actually married to a Christian. My husband is not Jewish. But that's good, because we are a symbol of one new man in Messiah. And that is the heart of God.
Wow.
That's why we call
it. Well, that's an incredible Messiah. Story, Carolyn. That's a just beautiful story. Well, I know you're a singer-songwriter, and you're sitting there with me, in front of me with a guitar, so I would love it if you played us a song before we chat anymore, and then you can tell us more about what you're up to. Would that be okay?
That sounds good.
So what are you going to play?
More and More Like You.
All right, take it away.
Guitar is not my guitar. It goes out of tune easily, so my apologies. Make me more and more like you, Lord, so that I can walk in the image and the likeness of your Son. Make me more and more like you, Lord, so that I can walk in the image and the likeness of your Son. Help me put off my old
'cause I believe that I died with Messiah and now I live. Help me put off my old self, 'cause I believe that I died with Messiah and now I live. Oh, now I live. In the image and the likeness of your Son, make me more and more like you, Lord, so that I can walk in the image and the likeness of your Son. Make me more and more like you, Lord. Od פחות ממני, עוד ועוד ממך. לי 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 לי.
Wow, that was beautiful. I'm speaking with Carolyn Hyde here in the Spirit Radio studio, and that was More and More Like You. Well, thank you for sharing that beautiful song with us.
Thank you.
And what a lovely voice you have, and the guitar. You said it's not your guitar. It actually sounded, I think it sounded okay.
I travel light from Israel, so yeah, sure. I borrow guitars and pianos along the way.
Yeah, and you were telling us your journey from growing up in an Orthodox Jewish community and then encountering God, Jesus, in your life when you were living a very, you know, lifestyle in Mexico. Now you're married to a Christian man and you're living in Israel. Tell us about what you're doing there.
Okay, gladly. Well, we're in a lot of trouble because we share the gospel very actively
right.
in Israel. And a lot of people are very much afraid to do that because the persecution is real. It is great. But it just burns in us, not only in me and in my husband, but also in our two sons, Ariel and Avi. And they are working, we all work together, but they work in a kind of like a partnership with our ministry and also our congregation, Keilat HaKarmel, Carmel Assembly. It's up in near Haifa, in Isfia.
Gotcha.
And so we all partner together. We basically support seven young Israelis who are going out and making videos on the street, kind of, you know, a man on the street with a microphone and a camera doing interviews. Perhaps some of the people listening today have seen one of our videos. It's already reached 9 million people.
Wow.
It's called Isaiah 53, The Forbidden Chapter.
Right. Okay.
And it's our son, Ariel, on the street. And he and my husband, Richard, wrote the script. And the idea is to go up to Israelis and say, hey, would you like to read a chapter from the Bible that nobody's reading anymore? Because what happened was the rabbis took it out of the weekly synagogue readings.
Why did they do that?
Because it's too clear. It's too clear. Who is this? We often sit with Israelis and we'll have a conversation and eventually we'll talk about Yeshua and we open up Isaiah 53 and when they read it in Hebrew, first thing everybody says, wait, this is in the Christian Bible. This is Jesus, you know? Mm. And no, it's in the Tanakh. It's in the Old Testament. It's in our Bible. Mm-hmm. And they're like astounded. And so you see people in this video and you can just see the changes on their faces while they're reading this and hearing what Yeshua did and why he came. See, our problem, and this was my problem and this is my people's problem. Like I mentioned, growing up, I was taught Hitler was a Christian. Okay, I know that makes no sense whatsoever.
But that was what? That was the version of history you were given. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. But think about it this way. Some of my family perished in the Holocaust, and the ones who survived, or people in the Jewish community, would tell us stories, you know, the Holocaust survivors, about how the guards would brutally beat them all week long. But then on Sunday, the Nazi guards would go to church and
right.
sing hymns.
Yeah.
So to the Jewish mind, you know, well, these are Christians, right? That's
yeah.
what Christians do. They go to church on Sunday and sing hymns. So, you know, what did we know? But it just, yeah, it's like the blinders.
Oh, sure. So it's a totally different perspective
yeah.
for folks, yeah. Yeah, and when you say you're in trouble for doing this work, does it mean that you're in danger, you know, in from the authorities or from people who don't like what you're doing?
There is a group in Israel, and I only say this, and I beg your people who are listening today, to please don't hate the ultra-Orthodox Jews, what we call the Haredim or the Datim. They're very, very religious. They're just like the religious people in Yeshua's time.
Right.
Who wanted to kill him too. It's the same spirit. It's still alive today. But please don't hate these people, because that's where Paul came out of.
Right.
Look at him. He wrote
yeah.
the New Testament. You
yeah,
know,
he was a Pharisee, and yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, sure.
And he was breathing murderous threats, and mm-hmm. that's what we're getting, is murderous threats. Also, an arm of the Israeli government, the Misrad HaPnim, the Ministry of Interior, they decide who gets citizenship and who doesn't. Now, they granted us citizenship almost 16 years ago. We made Aliyah. We immigrated to Israel under the right of return, because I'm Jewish, and so we had that right to do that. And now they're trying to take that away.
Okay.
But legally they can't, and they know it, because both our sons served 3 years each in the IDF, and we've been taxpaying citizens all these years, and they know they can't, but there's a lot of harassment.
Right, okay.
And even death threats against our son in particular.
Yeah.
So,
But why do it? Maybe this is just the clearest question I can ask. Why do you do it?
Why do we share the gospel?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't, it's something that burns inside. It's like the Ten Commandments, you know? They're not the Ten Suggestions. They're the Ten Commandments. It's what we're commanded to do, right? So we are commanded to share. It's part of who we are. And the way I see it is, we have the best news ever. You know, it doesn't get any better. Yeshua, Jesus, is Lord. There's no better news than that. And so, it's like if we hide this to ourselves and people are perishing around us, then we're not doing the will of God if we're living like that. Oh, I'm afraid to share my faith because what will people say? Maybe they won't like me. We don't worry about that.
Well, it's interesting hearing you talk. I mean, Christ did talk a lot about persecution, and
he did.
Blessed are you who are persecuted for my sake. Those are his words.
Amen.
So, well, it sounds like a lot of like what you're experiencing.
It is, but you know what? God uses it to cleanse and to heal. And at one point, it got so bad with the persecution that our lawyer, because we're in court and dealing with this, our lawyer said, you know, you might want to consider packing your bags and going back to America. And we were like, no, because God called us to Israel. It was such a clear calling that that he made. And so, you know, we came, and we've got 5 children, all Israeli citizens like my husband and I, and we have 11 grandchildren, all Tzabarim, all native-born Israelis. And so we're...
So it's a big clan.
Yeah, it
yeah,
is.
It's a big clan.
One more grandchild and we'll have a tribe. but it's like the quote that you made, though.
Mm. Yeah.
We see it as a blessing, but it's not so much fun.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like great fun.
No, but well, it strengthens your resolve.
Right, right. And you clearly believe in what you're doing. And
oh,
that's
yes.
And that's, it's great to hear about it. And tell me about, tell me how music plays a part in this. Because you're here, Carolyn, to do a tour. And I've got a list of where you're going to be. I'll shout that out in a minute. But talk to me about the music.
Okay. Well, you know, I grew up playing classical piano, and then I switched to blues guitar. I was a blues singer for many years before I...
Yeah, I can hear
Messiah.
A bit of the blues when
yeah,
you're singing. Yeah,
it's in
yeah.
there. And, but now, of course, I use the music to glorify God, and I use it. But the Lord has given me a lot of songs to play outside the congregation. Like, I go to New Age festivals with friends of mine, and I used to be in a band. We would sing the blues in Hebrew.
Wow.
And we did that for years. Just wherever the Lord opens a door, but I sing at different places, at events for Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
In the hospital, I was invited by the oncologist there to sing over his cancer patients while they're getting the chemotherapy. Just wherever there's a door open, and to sing songs of comfort.
Yeah.
Nachamu, nachamu ami, comfort, comfort my people.
Mm.
And things like this. And so I do worship songs, but I love to sing outside. And but about 3 or 4 years ago, a group of us got together in the Galilee. And this is kind of a highlight thing in my life, where we come together, we don't bring our song sheets or chord charts or anything. We're all musicians, and we just come together and wait on the Lord. And we're quiet at the beginning. And then maybe someone will have, someone on the harp will play, or someone just begins. And then we all come in, and one by one, and it's like we prefer one another, and we support one another. And it's a kind of worship music that I've never been involved with before, but I love it. And so it's gotten to the point where a lot of times I don't just do songs. I'll sing a whole chapter of a psalm. if that's
so, are you gonna do some of those in your gigs when you're here in Ireland too? Oh, that's amazing. So you'll be touring around, and you'll be bringing some of that to us, which is pretty cool. I mean, I must say, I had never heard of Heart of God Ministries before, and this is your first time here, right?
Yes.
So, but presumably you're going to be coming back again pretty soon.
Bezrat Adon, with God's help.
With God's help. Well, I'll tell you what, Carol, we're nearly out of time, but I need to just let folks know where they can find you. So let's just go through. I mean, you told me that pronouncing all these place names is going to be a challenge. I'm going to do this for you. So this is all fine. So God Sent Ministries are at Gavin Road, Newbridge, County Kildare, on Thursday the 15th. That's tomorrow at 6 p.m. You're going to be in Newbridge, County Kildare. Then on Friday, Father Heart Meeting, St. Eta's Hall in Abbeyfield in County Limerick. So ministering the Father's heart to God's children. You're going to be sharing according to the Father's heart in word and song. That's what I'm hearing here.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday, you're going to be running with the Father's heart in Abbeyfield, Rathkeel, County Limerick, the Great Southern Trail. So that's a little bit of a schedule of stuff happening there. And then in Carlow on Sunday the 18th in Carlow Town, County Carlow, at 7 p.m. Now, we can find out more about all of this at heartofgod.org. And it's Heart of God, Heart of G-D, Heart of God, done that way, without the O, heartofg-d.org, and that's where we can find it. And all the dates will be there, right? So folks in Ireland can check it out, right?
Yes, or they can send an email, and I'll forward it to Katie.
Okay, so what's the email address?
It is Hyde, H-Y-D-E, family, Israel, @gmail.com.
Hyde Family Israel, Hyde, H-Y-D-E, Family Israel, one word, @gmail.org. @gmail.com, excuse me. Getting my orgs and my comms. HideFamilyIsrael@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.